Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Joss Ogonie, Will Bluewater, a seventh grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody from the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio, coming to you from South Central Missouri, and this is your old buddy Blue Otter. Our special guest this week is John Hogue, the Rogue Scholar, the Nostradamus man. How are you, John?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Blue Otter.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Hey, you bet, you bet. So, I understand you wanted to talk to the people. I know I've been anxious to, especially since the tsunami hit, because back in the early 80s, I was telling my friends in the National Guard up in Oregon that I said, well, you know, the Berlin Wall is going to come down pretty soon, and we'll become allies with Russia, and they all just laughed. Of course, everybody knows that happened. But I was, and also been reading a little bit about the possibility of an event happening in the Indian Ocean. I thought I'd turn you. I thought we could start with the.
Yeah, well, there has been a prophecy of the 16th century French seer Nostradamus that was written back in 1555, 1556, that many scholars have been looking at because of two things. A lot of times the prophecies are open to interpretation because of the cryptic language Nostradamus used. But there are hundreds of the 1,400 or so prophecies that have very clear datings and mentions of areas and incidences that would be happening to parallel a specific event foreseen. And one of the more interesting prophecies in this regard is one that comes from Century 3, or Volume 3, Quatrain 3, that's the third quatrain in the volume. Nostradamus wrote four-line poems called quatrains, and in his book that he wrote called Les Prophéties, which was the prophecies, which is basically a history of the future, which dates future events at least as far as 1,800 years from now, to the year 3797, although it's implied to go even farther than that. But anyway, be that as it may, the prophecy in question reads thus: Mars and Mercury and the silver, that is a symbol for the full moon, join in an ensemble, or join together. Towards the south, there will be a great drought. From the bottom of Asia, an earthquake will be reported. Corinth, that means Greece, and Ephesus, Asia Minor or Turkey, then in a troubled or perplexed, stirred and confused state. Now, what's intriguing about this prophecy is that we have a date in astrology, something that Nostradamus only did 70 times in his book, is actually give clear astrological configurations. And then what a scholar has to do then is look at all the possible ramifications of having all three of those planets either together or two of them together with during a time when the moon is full. Not a lot of times when that happens. And so what I have done here is look at three, since 1993 I've been looking at three possible earthquakes. If it's in the bottom of Asia, then these three may be the ones he's talking about. The first was September of 1993, on the 30th of September, there was the Kalari-Lazur quake. That is the quake that took place in the central part of the Indian Peninsula, South Asian Peninsula, and it killed about 40,000 people. So it was a major earthquake, at least in the loss of life. And at that time, on the day it happened, Mars and Mercury were both in the constellation of Aquarius, but there was no full moon on that day. So two out of three makes it a close candidate, but maybe not the one that Nostradamus was speaking of. The next candidate was the Gujarati quake, which happened on January 26th of 2001. Now, that quake killed about 50,000 people. Some people say even upwards to 100,000 people. So it is a major quake.
Tragic.
Yeah. And I remember flying to India to stay at a meditation resort that I often go to since 1980. And I remember flying over the Gujarat state and seeing it completely blacked out for miles and miles. We flew over at night, and there are lights everywhere, but the Gujarati state. I remember also films were being shown from news that was picked up by the plane on its way in. Scenes of vast, from far as the eye could see, it looked like piles and piles of rock quarry piles with trees interspersed. Only it wasn't a rock quarry, it was the town of Buj. Ironically, the town of Buj was the place I was going to move itself from Pune to Buj 20 years before, but the politicians of the area brought to bear and it didn't happen. And it's so ironic that you never know. Sometimes when they denied us being able to move, you kind of think, oh, what a bad thing. But sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes what looks bad is actually a blessing. If we had actually gotten permission to move the meditation resort into Gujarat in the town of Buj, we might be all under piles of rubble, because the town was completely annihilated. So it's interesting how that goes. But be that as it may, the the astrology on that day showed the moon, although it was not full, was conjunct or joined with Mercury, but Mars was in Scorpio. So again, we have two out of the three planets fitting the date. Now we come up to the most recent earthquake, which ironically enough happened on a day number 26, just like the Gujarati quake, only it was December 26, 2004. And in that quake, which I would like to call the Great Indian Ocean quake, we have Mercury and Mars in Sagittarius. They're together in Sagittarius, and the moon was full. So that's a hit or near hit. The moon was not in Sagittarius, but it was full. All the elements of the first line have some fulfillment. So I would say this is the most important candidate for this famous prophecy.
And a green comet in the Pleiades, too.
Yeah, although I don't think that plays so much into it in the case of Nostradamus, because he was very visual in his prophecies. He heard them, he saw them, he smelled them. For a comet, many times people write me about a specific comet. We had the comet Neat last year, and some others, and saying, oh, this must be the important comet that's supposed to come at the end of all this to signify the entry into kind of a century of evolutionary crisis. Actually, I think one has to see it from the point of view of a 16th century man. The comet has to be big enough to be seen by the naked eye, and has to be a big comet, like something like Hale-Bopp or Hyakutake, which happened in 1997 and 1996, respectively, or something like the comet Halley. It has to be big like that for it to reach attention to Nostradamus, because he has to see it in the sky in his prophecies, and you can't see the little green guy. I can see it with the binoculars. It looks quite pretty, but it has to be seen with the naked eye. So I wouldn't say there's a comet really playing so much in this aspect, but if we look at, now let's look at that prophecy again with the idea that this is accurately dating the events of astrologically going on the 26th of December of last year. So he says, Mars and Mercury and the full silver moon in conjunction are joined together in an ensemble. Towards the south, there will be a great drought. Now, the word Nostradamus uses is Midi for south, which is another term for his homeland, which was Provence, which is a province in the southern part of France. Often when he's general with a point of south, he's not only talking about his own land, but perhaps anything south of that land. What's intriguing to me is that for almost 15 years now, the Mediterranean coast of France has been suffering in a perpetual long-term drought, with sudden and violent floods in the winter, but mostly major brush fires all up and down the French and Spanish Riviera. The other thing that is also happening south of that, farther deeper south, is that all of northern Africa, which is due south of Provence, is under desiccation and perpetual drought, which began in the 80s with the Ethiopian crisis and many famines, and now we have Darfur, Chad, the Lake Chad disappearing into the desert, vast lake, the Sudan, all these regions in the Saharan and sub-Saharan region, Mali and stuff, are under a legendary drought. So that means toward the south there will be a great drought. This is making it a contemporary issue around this dating of this astrological prediction. Now, the third line says, is very clear, no obscurity and ambiguity at all. It says, from the bottom or the depths of Asia, an earthquake will be reported. Nostradamus always catches big earth-shaking events, whether they are political, religious, or natural. The dilettantes that get into Nostradamus to try to find things like O.J. Simpson's bloody glove, or whether Princess Di was killed in an accident, this is just not of any interest to Nostradamus, which is about, he's always just dealing with the big issues that change our world. And so here we've got this earthquake reported at the bottom of Asia. Now, you look at a map, what is the bottom of Asia? It's actually, if you're looking at the landmass, if you ignore Sumatra, but just look at the fact that major tidal waves, tsunamis, crashed into the Malaysian Peninsula, of which the northern isthmus part of it is Thailand, Phuket, where all the resorts were. You have an earthquake affecting the deepest or bottommost physical land mass of Asia. Not only that, you have Nostradamus' love of double entendre. You have the word fond, which he uses, which can mean bottom or depth, implying ocean. An ocean quake in the depths of Asia. So that has been reported, and as of yesterday, Indonesian officials came in and said that they are now counting the missing as the presumed dead, which has suddenly upped the loss of life a total to about 230,000 dead. My sense is, and they're saying, there's many more thousands that they can't that are unaccounted for. Haven't gotten into the southern regions of Aceh to find what has happened. Knowing from my experience of visiting and living in South Asia, people, government officials will always tell you that whatever is officially reported, you can count 10 people who are not on any records anywhere, because a lot of those areas in the developing world, people don't keep records. And a lot more people live in shanty towns and other things in those areas than are even reported. So when they say 15,000 died in India, put it up at 150,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very likely, I would think, that there's upwards to 1.5 million people who are dead from this event across the entire region. That would also make sense if 5 to 10 million people are displaced by this these waves. So what I'm getting to is this is a major event that Nostradamus would not have ignored, because it is changing the course of the world in one way for the better. It's actually creating an interest in putting a global tsunami system in place around all oceans of the world. And secondly, it's the unprecedented co-efforts and it's a kind of a trance. It's the biggest
wake-up call.
Well, it's a wake-up call, but it's also people are going out and helping. Countries all around the world are giving. It's a rescue mission of global proportion. Now.
It's like 9/11 for the global.
Yeah, so now we come to the issue of what the final line says. Corinth and Ephesus, then in troubled state, or meaning Corinth is code for Greece, and Ephesus, Turkey or Asia Minor, then in a troubled state. Now, this indicates two possibilities. It's either an event that Nostradamus got mistakenly out of sequence, and we're talking about the major earthquake in the Gulf of Corinth that shortly followed a week or two after the great earthquakes in Turkey in 1999. These were significant quakes. 40,000 to 49,000 people died in Turkey. And Greece also was rocked by a series of 7.5 quakes in August of 1999. Now that would certainly be something that comes after the original candidate that I spoke of earlier, the Kalari-Lutuer quake, and it comes very close before, within a year and a half or so, to the Gujarati quake. The other possibility is that it's about a future superquake in the Greece, Turkey, Western Turkey region, in the Aegean Sea. And those who argue this point would point out that Nostradamus pointing to Corinth in particular, which is one of the highest fault line areas of Greece, and Ephesus also has a fault system that is not the same earthquake fault system that shook in 1999. That's farther north towards Istanbul. Some of my Greek friends and Turkish friends have pointed out that the Ephesus fault in southwestern Turkey was not shook So because it's specifically, with Nostradamus, you never know until the events whether he specifically means Ephesus or he's using this ancient city as a synecdoche, which is this is kind of a Greek play on words that he often used and people used in the 16th century to make, for instance, if I want to talk about America, I would say New York will do this and do that, or Los Angeles will do this and do that, when I really mean America.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
OCO is Cherokee for hello. This is Chia Sagonige, also known as Will Bluewater. I'm the International Communications Director for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. I'm speaking on behalf of the Seven Clans and beloved woman Sharon Rogers, wife of Chief Priest and Principal Chief Charles L. Yatlohi Rogers, M.D., oncologist. Their family discovered the tomb in Mexico of Sequoia, the world-famous inventor of the Cherokee alphabet and the namesake of the Cherokee National Forest in California. The state of Oklahoma was very nearly named the state of Sequoia. Nación Cherokee de México, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, is known in the United States as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia of Mexico, Texas, and the USA Reservation and Church. Free of any charge, we are accepting citizenship and adoption applications, not only from Cherokee descendants, but from all people of good heart, from all lineages, just as we did for the 10,000 plus years before the United States government fairly recently imposed restrictions on Cherokee citizenship. Tennessee Governor Sam Houston had not one drop of Cherokee blood, yet he left office and later became Kalanu, or Speaker of Council, second only to Chief John Jolly of the Cherokee Nation West. The Republic of Mexico has recognized the Cherokee four times since the 1700s, and Spain five times before that. We possess original physical copies of all those treaties. In January of 2001, the San Andres Accords, enabling government-to-government tripartite relationships between sovereign Indian nations and the government of Mexico, were passed by the Mexican Congress. A few weeks later, the first such sovereign Indian nation, Nación Cherokee de México, was federally recognized in a solemn ceremony in Torreón, the capital of the state of Coahuila, formerly known as the province of Coahuila in Texas. The ceremony was followed by a fabulous celebration, which was attended by Cherokee elders from all over the Americas, including citizens of the federally recognized Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, people like Squaw Yee, the famed bowmaker Al Heron. There is so much more to share with you, so I encourage you to visit our website at CherokeeDiscovery.com. While you are visiting the website, feel free to fill out a free citizenship application. Please be patient, though. We have no paid staff, and applications may take up to 9 months or more to get processed. If you're not a Cherokee, feel free to request adoption. And please don't forget, tell them Bluewater sent you. Ski. Wado.
Well, Ephesus, when I really mean Turkey in general. The other thing that's important to understand is that the perplexite, which is the final word, the troubled state, and is open to be interpreted to be political earthquakes and disruptions as well as seismic disruptions. And Asia Minor, certainly as we enter into the second term of the Bush administration and with the foreboding signs that things are unraveling in Iraq and might spread this unraveling throughout the region of the Middle East and Asia Minor, it's equally possible that if this is about future events, that we're talking about a political earthquake, a revolution or disruption of the region.
It hasn't been that long since Turkey actually controlled a lot of that.
Yes, and it is... It is intriguing also to note that for the hundreds of years that the Ottoman Empire, before it fell after World War I, ruled the area which is modern-day Iraq, they never united Iraq, what is called Iraq today, as one country. They understood that it is actually three separate regions, three separate ethnic cultures: Mesopotamia, which is Shia, Kurdistan, which is Kurdish, and the Sunni Muslims that live around the city-state of Baghdad. So they used to have them as three separate provinces. It was only united by the hubris of the West after they redrew the maps of the Middle East in 1920. One could argue that the karma of making such decisions by Westerners who are unsympathetic or insensitive to the realities of the region they've conquered, we're now living with the karmic result, which I do believe will eventually, sooner or later, see to the breakup of Iraq back to these three groups. And this election at the end of the month is probably beginning the process.
Yep, I think you're right.
And it's a strange, it's kind of this assumption that Iraq must be one country that's really behind a lot of the strategic mistakes that are going to come. Of course, there are some very interesting prophecies concerning Iraq, and I'm prompting them up right now on my computer here.
While you're doing that, you know, years ago I read Norbergen's book, the way he was interpreting, you know, that there would be some kind of a round mountain, six or seven stades in diameter. You think he missed the mark there, but he ties that to an event that would inundate the subcontinent, Eastern Africa and Western Australia, which is pretty close.
And yeah, the Norbergen took a lot of license with, in my opinion, with a lot of his interpretations of these things. There's no specific reference to South Asia in the prophecies. Primarily, the ones that sound like this is a meteor coming from the sky, a quarter mile in circumference. That actually, and I always wondered why Norbergen would talk about India when the prophecy actually mentions the place where it collides with the Earth, which is in the Aegean Sea off the island of Negropont, which is this long, thin island which is called Evoia. I think that's the correct pronunciation in Greek. That's just east of Athens, in the Athens Peninsula. And in the prophecies that I delineated in my book, Nostradamus, The New Millennium, I have a whole segment where I collect what sounds like a similar theme in several prophecies that looks at a collision of a mountain from the sky, a meteor, hitting that area, initially causing a splash that is supposed to go over the height of the Mount Olympus. So that's over 10,000 foot initial splash. And then send tidal waves, at least seven major tidal waves, all up and down the Mediterranean coastline, kind of make the Mediterranean slosh like a pool. And because of the town that he said that would survive in the Arno Valley, because it was high enough, we're looking at a wave that goes back and forth seven times in the Mediterranean that's at least 900 feet high.
Wow, that'd probably take out Rome, wouldn't it?
Well, it would take out everything that's on the Mediterranean coast. But the good sign of all this is that he doesn't give a date, and there's other references to major cosmic disasters that seem to be dated for the year 3755 to 3797 AD, which is a period where he speaks of the sun. He calls it the final conflagration, where the earth is basically devoured by the sun. And that after this happens, Mars continues its revolutions around the sun. and he describes what first is all these huge meteor strikes and meteor hails the size of an egg coming onto the earth and basically burning all the surface and burning off all the oceans even. And what I find very interesting about this is that there's not, in essence, there's nothing that he's saying in these prophecies, which you can find in his prophetic letters, in the Presage and the Epistle, which I also have translated in my book, Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies. It doesn't, you couldn't, if you were an astronomer, you couldn't argue with anything but the dating for this kind of conflagration. I mean, he's basically describing what any astronomer would tell you would happen. If the sun becomes old and begins to not burn enough of its fusion fuel to keep its consistency, it would begin to bloat and expand into a red giant. This process, of course, would cause Venus and other planets to be broken up, or other things happening, which would cause meteor showers and fire from the sky, and eventually the atmosphere would be blown off, and the waves would be, and the seas would be dried out, and then eventually the sun would expand to the distance of, or at, or shortly beyond the Earth. The Earth would literally be drowned in the fires of a red giant, and Mars would definitely move around this new red giant sun. The thing that's amazing is, even though astronomers would say that we have another 4 billion years to live on this planet before these events happen, and they would certainly not say it's 1,800 years from now, how interesting it is for a man without telescopes, or a man who was not an astronomer but an astrologer and a psychic and a prophet, how interesting is it that he, a century before Galileo and his telescope, would get the volume of the mass of the sun right. The sun definitely will become as large as the Earth's orbit in diameter when it gets old. How did he know that?
Like 100 million miles.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 93 to 100 million miles in circumference. How, in diameter, how did he know that? That's a very significant prophecy. It has to be one of his most distant dated prophecies in history.
Offhand, do you not happen to know the diameter of the sun now?
No, I don't. I think it's something like 500. I don't know. You could put a whole lot of Earth in it.
Yeah, but it would expand just to be unbelievable size. Did you happen to catch the, about a year before the Hopi Elders went on the Art Bell show, they were on another show with Robert Ghostwolf, and they were talking about that about 7 years from them, when a bright comet was in the sky, and about 7 years or less after the comet Neat had disappeared from the sky, they said that the Purifier star would appear. They said it would be discovered, sometime within 18 months after that, and might even take a telescope to find it. But you know, that May of 2003, which was 7 years after that show and 6 years after they were on the Art Bell show, you know, that month there was a very small red dwarf that was discovered, only about 11 light years from Earth. And it was when Neat was in the sky, brightest comet ever. And then within 18 months, you come up to November this last year, and all kinds of fireworks starting. So looks like you saw something in the wind there.
Well, yes and no. Neat actually wasn't that bright. Neat didn't even come close to the magnitude of Hale-Bopp or Halley, or even Hyakutake. It wasn't that significant a cosmic event, in my opinion, at least. So, you know, always with this dating issues, dating is the hardest thing to achieve in prophecy because it requires a certain predictability of so many factors that it's the hardest thing to fulfill. And some prophets have been very good at it, but their prophecies are rare, like Nostradamus will say in 1555 that the Ottoman Empire and the Persian Empire would, after fighting a war, would sign a treaty in October of 1727, he said. And it wasn't in code. He just said October 1727.
Yeah.
And he described a number of the lands that would be traded by the two combatants. And he said it would be detrimental to Christendom. Good reason why, because suddenly the two biggest powers in Islam at that time were now united against Christendom. So, you know, here's a man making a prediction that's getting the provinces right, getting the combatants right. I mean, how many hundreds of countries... You know, it's trillions of factors to one that he could have gotten all those issues right. But it's very, very rare. And, you know, the same thing, too, with there are certainly, in the Hopi prophecies, a number of clear signals. And not just in the Hopi prophecies, but actually the Hopi prophecies are almost like a root tradition that has variants in all the 500 nations of North America, and many also in South America, issues that run upon similar lines. We have an iron, you know, you have the iron horse on the iron road as a sign of the end times. You have iron wires strung up in the sky, telephone wires. You have the cobwebs crisscrossing the sky, which is a very significant sign. That's contrails of planes. That's a very recent development in our skies. Actually, after 9/11, for a week, when I was running, jogging around where I live here in the Puget Sound region, I looked up at the skies and saw skies that American Indian seers and everybody up to the point of just 50 years ago would have seen, the skies that were devoid of any sign of human contrails or planes, because everything was grounded a few days after 9/11. It was a very different sky, and you would think a seer would look at that and go, "Oh, you know, we take them for granted, but imagine if you were in the 19th century and you saw a modern sky, you'd think this is a sign of the end times, and maybe it is end of things as we know them."
Well, Reno, I said what I did about Need is that Paul Brecky, who was a SOHO deputy project science, told Space.com that Need was. It is far the brightest and largest comet ever seen.
It was in the SOHO picture when it was very close to the sun.
Yeah.
And the thing is that as far as the human eye seeing it, when it was bright, and it did get bright, nobody here saw it. And so I think it's very key that for a sign to come from existence to tell people that something's happening, it has to be something as... For instance, if Hale Bopp in 1997 had not been on the other side of the sun and the other side of the solar system, if it had been at the position that Comet Halley was in 1912 when it made its close pass, you would have looked in the middle of a clear blue sky in broad daylight and seen its tail go across half the sky.
Yeah,
and it would actually cast shadows brighter than a full moon at night. Now that's the kind of comet that I'm thinking would be the sign.
Good thing.
And when I climbed up the Mount Si near Seattle here, I got high enough out of the Pahanas pollution and got up there to see the comet. It was amazing that the sodium tail of Hale-Bopp on its brightest day in April 1997, April 30th or so, did go a third of the sky. It went much farther, looked much bigger than it did at sea level.
What they said was that a new red star would be discovered while a blue comet was already in the sky within 7 years after Hale-Bopp disappeared. And that 7 years was up May 2003.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is that they not only found that little red dwarf, and nobody noticed it until I looked into it. I didn't even know about the prophecy until that month. Mm-hmm. Started looking into it. And then I got on the NASA website and went, oh, gee, well, there's the blue comet. And then I found out about this little, they said, in the sky, we'll have time to change our patterns and change our ways. When we no longer see it in the sky, it'll be a sign that there'll be very little time left, perhaps 18 months or less, before the purifier returns. but it was not only, you know, that red dwarf, but they also had that was the Planet X scare year, and it was also the year that shortly there, well, Mars made its close approach, and Sedna was discovered shortly thereafter, which is a red planet. And it was just all really, really kind of interesting that it all came down around that period of time, May 2003, and then counting forward 18 months, you know, you come up to, you know, November, you know, when, you know, a lot of these things started happening. In,
you mean November of 2004?
Yeah.
Well, it's very key to something. I mean, it is basically, Blue Otter, we've already passed all the warnings. When the EP in the house has been built in the sky, that's Space Station Alpha. It's now a question of when we're in it. And I mean, from that take, it is an interesting statement, because if that's how they said it, then they are talking about NASA discovering things, and then it does not need to be a naked eye situation.
They said it would take a telescope to find the Red Kachina star.
Right.
It says that maybe even would need telescopes. Well, that first week in May, I got to looking around. I was wondering, well, when did the Hale-Bopp disappear? Well, it disappeared from the Northern Hemisphere the first week of May, six years previous to 2003. And then, so it was within their 7 years. But that week, first week of May 2003, they had the largest spate of tornadoes, like, you know, and the first 10 days of May, which is unbelievable. It's huge.
We're also in a solar mega cycle.
Mm-hmm. We're also tornadoes that month.
And clearly the weather is going out of control, and we are in the process. And also I find it significant that, kind of as a last warning issue, one of the most significant last events and is the re-election of someone running this country who, as far as prophecy goes, is a person who is potentially mentioned in decoding Nostradamus's three cryptic names for the three, what he calls three antichrists.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. And you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Well, years ago I'd always heard, and I could never remember, I heard that our last president would also be named George, and the first president. I mean, never could remember where that prophecy came from. And
Well, it's probably the George Washington prophecy. It's supposed to have been purported to have been written by George Washington, I believe.
Yeah, the one of Valley Forge didn't mention that. It was something else that I saw somewhere, and I wasn't the only person that saw it, because I've asked people, so other people have heard of it. I mean, it's just kind of a rumor.
Well, this is the thing that it could be a rumor, but one thing we know is Nostradamus in 1550s described in his view of these purification times that there would be three antichrists. First one he named Napala Noir, Napoleon King. The second he named Hister, for Hitler, and the third he called Mavus, M-A-V-U-S. Now, the the thing that's intriguing with this one is that there are two people. I've been following the Mabus code, trying to break it since 1986. And many, many candidates have come and gone. But one, we are now down to two candidates of great interest to me. One is Osama bin Laden, the head of Al-Qaeda. Because if you phonetically spell in Roman letters, the correct phonetic spelling is USAMA, not OSAMA.
That's right.
Just like we don't say America, even though we do say Iraq when it should be Iraq. The Usama with the B from Bin is a classic anagram for a redundant A replacement, which gets to MAAUS, take the B from Bin Laden, replace the A, you get Mabus.
Right.
But for many people in the West, they're satisfied with that. But when it gets a little difficult for people, especially in America, is when I say that you can also very easily word crunch G.W. Bush as Mabus. Mabus Bush. For one thing, you have the B.U.S. of Bush, and then if you take M.A. and turn it 90 degrees, which you can in anagrams, if you can make new letters out of old letters by turning them upside down or turning them backwards, you get a lowercase G.W. turned 90 degrees becomes G. W. M.A. becomes G.W. So you have G.W. Bus with the silent H.
Interesting.
Now,
then you got the whole thing with Muhammad Abbas.
Yes, Mahmoud Abbas or Abu Mazen. What makes it difficult is that another law in anagrams are that you can drop the letters, the beginning and last letter of a word, which, of course, if you drop M and S out of Mabus, you get Abu, which unfortunately names, it's hard for the Prophet scholar because it almost everybody in the PLO in their code name uses the Arabic word father, Abu, in their code name, Abu Nidal, Abu Musab, and so forth. So, and the other problem is that sometimes you, or on rare occasions, have somebody who's named literally Mabus, like Raymond Mabus, who used to be the ambassador to Saudi Arabia in the U.S. And you should have heard all the letters I got in the mid-90s about that.
I didn't hear about that one.
Oh, yeah, it's Raymond Mabus, M-A-B-U-S.
Well, maybe you know the conjunction of the three, Bush and Abbas and Salam.
Well, it's possible that, you know, Nostradamus, when seeing the distant future, sometimes got his sequences askew, as I've been saying about the Greek and Turkish thing in the earthquake prophecy. For instance, there's all these very clear prophecies about a future invasion of Germany by Germany invading France, his home country. But it's perplexing because until you realize that a lot of the details in one line actually apply to 1914 and the next line applies to 1940. Now, he didn't see them as two separate invasions and two separate world wars. He saw them as one. And when you then look at those prophecies again and pick out those details from different maneuvers from different wars, he's hit right on the mark a number of the things that actually happened in both invasions. So when that happened, and I kind of look at that in detail in Nostradamus, the Complete Prophecies, it made me think that even other events and people could be composites of more than one person.
Well, I just had kind of a flash, and I don't get these insights real often, but when Nostradamus was alive, Turkey was Mohammedan or Muslim, right?
Well, it was the Ottoman Empire. It was at its peak, and actually Europe was quite besieged and divided and was in a weak position, and it was often felt, in fact, he had a very, very strong bias from his times that Islam would invade Europe, which it did in part. He did get that half right.
Well, the Europeans finally beat the Mohammedans on September 11th, pretty close to Austria, I guess, was the final battle.
Well, that would be the battle of the Siege of Vienna, which happened in the 1650s, I believe. I don't know if it happened on September 11th.
It did.
there were two sieges of Vienna. Let's see, I'm pulling out my ever trusty encyclopedia of battles here. And
well, when I say it did, I mean, you know, that's...
But, you know, I mean, that's very interesting if it did. That's why I'm looking at the very, very, very...
Well, that was the internet wisdom, but the reason why I was going to ask you is when he was saying that Corinth and Turkey, you said, would be in perplexity?
Yes.
Why couldn't it be the political system that originated in Greece and the political system that was... at that time, in power in Turkey, and you know, the democracy and republics, basically, the idea come out of Greece, and why couldn't he be talking about a showdown and perplexity between democratic systems and the Muslim system?
Well, that is actually a very good potential, Blue Otter. I mean, that is something to consider. That's something I haven't considered, and it could be... He could be waxing more poetic, and that certainly has to be considered. Because certainly there's a lot of times where Nostradamus talks about earthquakes, but they're not physical. They're cultural. They're the quaking of the fault lines of two civilizations. So, yes, I think you've stumbled on something that should be considered.
I got it as a flashlight. I don't get that very often in the daytime, but... It kind of hit me, you know. The other thing is, back in about 1930, when the Mormon Cardston Temple, before it was dedicated, you know, before Mormon temples are dedicated, anybody can go in and visit, there was a woman by the name of Mrs. Saul Gardisto, who was a Quaker lady, and she went in and was on the tour, and she had an open vision, and it's called the Cardston Temple Prophecy. She wrote a letter, sent it to the temple president. It's been widely circulated all these years. But she saw back then that the Third World War would be between the so-called followers of Mohammedism and the so-called followers of Christ.
Yep.
And that it would begin in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and she said the geological changes would begin in the Northwest. And, you know, it was an amazing thing she said in her obscure prophecy. And she said that the Cardston area would be safe from earth changes, but the things would begin, you know, up about where you are.
Yeah, well, it's possible. I would imagine that if she's speaking of major changes like that, then my region is probably going to have... We're overdue for a return of the great 1700 earthquake.
Well, you know...
Although I'm very sensitive to earthquakes, and we get them a lot up here, and actually one can cultivate an ability to watch the animals.
Well, you know, the little sister grandmother...
I haven't felt that yet.
Little sister volcano, grandfather mountain volcano... Prophets.
Yes,
those are, you know, Mount Baker, some of these other mounts that those are heating up now. And when St. Helens was erupting, Hot Springs, Arkansas was heated up to the point where the Park Service secretly called in people to, you know, wondering what was going on, and it was kept secret. And
well, the same with Yellowstone. That Yellowstone would also fit in a general northwestern quarter, even in Wyoming, northwestern Wyoming. Maybe it doesn't have to be the extreme northwest like Puget Sound region, but and certainly there's a lot of...
Idaho is northwest.
Yeah.
And,
so is Montana,
yeah.
So is the Wyoming, you know, in that part where Yellowstone is. So, yes, I mean, there's... her prophecy is there are a lot of similar visions over the years about that. That's why she's kind of sharing something that is actually a general theme.
This is before big oil.
Yeah.
And who would ever thought that the Mohammedans would be a threat to any Western power? I mean, who'd ever thought that the Brothers of Aquilon that Nostradamus wrote about would become allies and share communications across the pole. Both have
yes.
a symbol of Russia, have the eagle, now that's back on their flag now, I guess.
Yes, it is. Double-headed eagle, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's very interesting about Aquilonier and the northern powers, because he talks about them as being the great brothers of the north, and he uses a funny play of words, which also says who are not yet brothers, who are half,
yeah,
or split. And it's interesting that the trend of prophecies from certain interpreters that seems to be right on track are those that never saw the Cold War as being the cause of the Third World War. But actually, there are the people who see the... there are people who see that the whole war between Russia and America would end, they'd become friends, and then the friendship would be broken, and then the war between the two of them. That actually, and it's broken, a lot of the collective threads point to it stresses in the Middle East that would cause, or North Africa, that would cause these friends between 3 to 13 years after their clear alliance to go to war. Now, there are also prophecies that say very clearly in many traditions that there are three great world wars. And that the third, as Pastor Bartholomeus used to say in the 17th century, he shares a vision that better verbalized than a lot of others, that says, with open eyes, they will step into these conflagrations. And I've often stated, and I often find it such a frustrating situation, that people today have this false idea that we are no longer under the danger of thermal nuclear war between Russia and America. And nothing has really changed.
And it's never been a weapon that's been used, hasn't been, or invented that wasn't used with.
Well, the other thing, too, is that the amount of weapons on either side that have been dismantled have only destroyed the overkill factor. Yeah, now we can kill ourselves a couple hundred times over rather than 800 times over. The fact that the more forward we move into, and I've been saying this since my first book in 1986, that the more we advance to disarmament and lower the numbers, the more we're actually moving back to the numbers held in times at the highest peak of the Cold War. For instance, right now we have as many bombs still poised and ready as we did in 1972 with the Yom Kippur crisis. Now, back at that time, people thought that World War with thermonuclear weapons could happen any moment. We still have those arsenals to those levels, and yet we don't have the mindset that thinks that it even exists as a danger.
Well, have you seen that TV show where the Secretary of State back during Johnson-Nixon years?
McNamara.
McNamara. It's called the
Secretary
of War.
Yeah, the Secretary of... He's one of the few voices...
He came right up.
McNamara. It's one of the few voices that understands the danger. Him and Sam Nunn.
Well, he's right now on cable. There's this TV show. It's called The Fog of War. And it's,
yes.
And he said, you know, four times we came to the brink by accident. We could have deferred, but by accident.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't even know. They didn't even know until 30 years after Bay of Pigs that the Russians were so scared of us, they had no idea. They were just quaking in their boots at us.
Well, yeah, and they had the Frog missiles, which had nuclear weapons on the beaches.
That's right.
Even Khrushchev didn't know.
And they didn't know that. They didn't know that 30 years later when they got together.
Soviet command control systems allowed generals of brigades to launch missiles on their own. And if we had gone in the Bay of Pigs, our invading fleets would have been melted. We would have thermal nuclear war. Now, the funny thing is that we will have to destroy another 30,000-40,000 nuclear weapons to get to the point of how many weapons we had back in the closest brush of World War III, the Cuban Missile Crisis. And yet, with 20 times more missiles laying around that in minutes can be pointed to any place in the world, we sit here in the early aughts of the 21st century not feeling the sense of uh-oh about the fact that we still are under a nuclear terror, and we are behaving and pretending like Bartholomew said, we are standing here with open eyes, and if we don't clean those eyes and look at what's happening and disarm those weapons, we are going to walk with open eyes into the third conflagration with our friends, the Russians, between 3 and 13 years after an alliance is established. And it will be caused because of misuse and mistakes committed in the Middle East. Are we not committing those mistakes now?
Well, I remember there's two events that I really quaked in my boots, and one was when Reagan said, we are entering a new era of peace and security. I went, oh man, there's a Bible prophecy. And then the other one was Bush stood up and said that we are forging our alliance with Russia.
Yes, in May of 2002, I believe, he made a very
significant... I'm talking about Bush's father.
Yeah.
Bush's father said that.
I know. And then Bush Jr., Bush the younger, went to Putin in... and kind of advanced the New World Order concept with Vladimir Putin. I think it was in May of 2002 where he got Putin to agree to... Putin wanted to not only dismantle the carrier systems, but he wanted to destroy the warheads. Because basically no warheads have been destroyed. There are still 80,000 nuclear weapons in the world. There just been several thousand of their delivery systems destroyed. He wanted to destroy the weapons. Bush didn't, and to solidify an agreement for future disarmament, he had to compromise with Bush and allow America as well as Russia to keep their warheads, but not their delivery systems. It doesn't, you know, the warheads, if he had destroyed the warheads, it would have been much harder to create new nuclear bombs. It doesn't take a lot of energy, really, compared to building a nuclear bomb from scratch, to build a missile to deliver it.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
And so in a way, this is a kind of a false disarmament. We are not disarming, we are just kind of stockpiling for an Armageddon, for a doomsday rainy day.
We just took the gun belt off and put it in the closet.
That's a good way of putting it.
It's still
we've
there.
We've cocked the gun, we've put it in the holster and stuck it on the wall.
Stuck it on the wall.
Yeah, we haven't thrown it into the lake.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so this is... This is where we stand, and we also stand in an interesting strategic situation because the Middle East is going to get worse. Iraq is the second Vietnam, and soon, going back to your statements and our statements about the importance of November of 2004 with this timing of when the purification happened, I can't help but say that the re-election of President Bush is now launches, and since today we are taping this on the day of the inauguration, I heard some of the speech this morning, and I was rather surprised by its belligerency and its theme of basically, in so many words, saying we're going to war against totalitarianism, and you either take our form of democracy or else.
You might as well have said I've seen the enemy and it is us.
Well, yes, and the thing is, this is stated at a time when things are coming unraveled in Iraq. Three, four months ago, I was using astrological divination to describe in my Hope Prophecy bulletins that the soonest that we will be striking with airstrikes against Iran is late July of 2005. And then Seymour Hersh the other week, just a few days ago, writes an article for the New Yorker, where his sources within the Bush administration are already planning for invasion and airstrikes, guess what, in the summer of 2005. So an objective source and a subjective source have come to the same conclusion that we're opening a window of possibility of a widening war. That also, I think, from the way what was said in between the lines, is that if North Korea and Iran do not kowtow to our idea of what they should be, we will go to war with those two countries.
Yep.
And so this is, we are in the roller coaster ride now.
Yep, we sure are.
Now, I'm trying to think as we're coming towards the end of this, is what good, what positive things that we can derive from this. And I think what I talk about this in great detail in many of my books, like Messiahs, the Visions and Prophecies for the Second Coming, and Millennium Book of Prophecy. But, these are scary times, but I suppose they're as scary as it is for a mother who's having the birth pangs of her first birth. It can also be scary times, but I'd like to say that the attitude that people can have is that, look, we have, according to the Hopis and many native traditions, East and West, have gone through four deaths and rebirths of this earth, and we are about to enter a fifth. These are births, and they are painful to a certain degree, especially if you want to hold on to the past. Certain Hopis that I've spoken to over the years have described that the thing that would kill most people in the coming purification would be change. They'd drop dead from their own fear of change.
Bible says that too. People would be scared to death, and if they feared, they'd be caught in a snare.
So with that collective vision, I think it tells me that I need to celebrate the unknown and the new, rather than project all the things I fear from the past on the neutral, unknown, and new. That, in fact, innovation and thinking out of the box is a form of survival. And that more and more people, as things get worse by holding on to the past, will see the necessity to think in new ways, to feel in new ways, and to redefine themselves. And I think this coming 100 years will see the rebirth of a new humanity, a purification that is necessary.
I couldn't help but, I don't know if you follow the saga of John Titor, who claims to be a time traveler that comes back from 2036, but he said that once the governments were destroyed, you know, the Russian and the American people became close friends and our biggest trading partners, but the way he described the way we were living was very agricultural, close to the earth, and community-based. And Edgar Casey said that Russia was the light of the world. He says, not the kind of communism that they practice, he says, but the kind of communism that Jesus taught.
Yeah.
So this is the old system of...
It's communism.
Basically, it's what native people were living before they started warring with each other, and they screwed things up. But if we lived all things common under Creator, we wouldn't we wouldn't need the bomb. We wouldn't need anybody but Creator to. The scriptural promises are there. We fed like stall-fed calves. All our needs are taken care of, and Creator will fight our battles for us. So, Casey, you're on to something.
It's a theme. Actually, I had a whole chapter on Russia as the Hope of the World, which was based on, in Millennium Book of Prophecy, which is based on looking at Edgar Cayce's amazing prophecies about that. And, you know, people forget that early Christian communities were communes, where everybody shared things alike. And also, what is a general tone I often see in prophecies for the future is that once we kind of see the dysfunction and the unsustainability of the way our world is going now with the earth and with each other, it's going to create the necessity of working together and sharing what we have. It's actually setting us up for a return. It's kind of like the ancient future. I see more tribal-based ideas returning. It's primarily in the next 60 years in this country. You know, there are many seers from the East who have stated that this country is in the next great era, is going to be the next cradle of the new religiousness in the world. That there are also, this ties in with certain prophecies even in Native American circles that sort of see Pahana, the white brother, returning, and if the good Pahana will kind of adopt and become the new Indians.
That's
the
right.
And that can only happen once America has its arrogance exposed and destroyed.
Right.
And in a way, from the way Mr. Bush was speaking this morning, he is definitely, for better or worse, advancing that day when America will stop bullying people and have to turn in on itself and fulfill its greatest destiny, which is to be a cradle of new religiousness in the world.
I know, I was looking at the old 52, well, I was a guest on Coast to Coast the other night, was talking about the old 52 playing card system that came from the old Egyptian system, and if you don't put July 4, 1776, but put the February 1787 day, I believe it was Treaty of Paris, which was when we were actually accepted into the family of nations, that you put that date into the computer and look at it, it says that we would be the kind of people that would be a bright light, but that we would have to be very careful not to bully people. Comes right out and says it. I'll send you that reading. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I'd love to see that, because that is the karmic lesson collectively of America. We are right now entering our adolescent period in our life as a nation. All countries have lives that go through chapters just like normal people and individuals. And you know, every country, if they last long enough, eventually plays, after playing the good guys, will sometimes play the bad guys. And every country, if it lasts long enough, will get itself involved in wars it doesn't need to fight and nearly destroy itself in the process, but after which becomes more mature and wise in the process.
Well, they set us up as a republic, and you know, they were really enamored, back in that age with Rome, and they set us up under a Roman system. And Benjamin Franklin said, here, we've given you a republic, see if you can keep it. Well, there is something better. But it's really hard to maintain unless people have really got their hearts right. Before I let you go, the last book of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy is called All Things Common, and you'll be getting a copy of it. We put together a lot of different prophecies and scriptural things from a lot of different directions, and look at the systems like the Amish people and the Native people and the Mormons' failed experiment, and what the mistakes were in the past and what we can look forward to in the future. And your answer book talks about it also. It says that is the utopian system will start, well, kind of like a snowball rolling downhill, that kingdom would come down out of the mountain and pick up speed and pick up mass as it rolls down the hill, and eventually it'll fill the whole world.
Yes. Starts with a small individual, and it does snowball into nations.
Well, we sure appreciate you. This has been a fascinating. For what we've done in an hour, it's absolutely amazing what you and I have done together, and it's been a lot of fun. I sure appreciate you being on the show, John.
Well, thanks for having me on, Blue Otter. I look forward to doing it again soon.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let the truth be known.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Through the years,
let me call you often. running.